Welcome to New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. I'm Stephen Spitz. On today's show, we are joined by well-known Santa Fe author Natalie Goldberg. Her just-published memoir is Let the Whole Thundering World Come Home, and we are very pleased that it brings her to our show. Natalie Goldberg, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
So I'd like to spend most of the show on your new book, but you're also extremely well-known for your workshops and books on how to write and on writing. And I wonder if we could start by having you tell us how you got started as a professional writer, because I'm sure a lot of listeners would like to know that.
Well, I don't really think of myself as professional, because professional makes me uptight, like I'm supposed to be a certain way. I can tell you how I first started writing. I was a poet for 13 years. And I wrote a book called Chicken and in Love, a book of poetry by Holy Cow Press. And then I had been developing and having writing groups in my living room for about 10 years, developing what I call writing practice. And in 1986, I came out with a book called Writing Down the Bones.
And that's a bestseller. That is really well known and is an actual bestseller, right? That's not an exaggeration.
It's been out for 33 years, and it still sells about 35,000 a year. And when it first came out, it sold a few million. It just met America right where it was. If it came out in 1950, it probably would have died. So I wrote that, and the whole world opened up. Once you're successful in the straight publishing world, they'll publish, they really pay attention to you. So since then, I've written 14 books. And my memoir, Let the Whole Thundering World Come Home, I think is my 14th book.
I see. So it's sort of amazing that one of your first books ever was on how to write. And do you think that your struggle with, you were doing these writing groups and you were figuring out how to write yourself. Do you think that helped you write this book?
Oh, that's a wonderful question. That's wonderful. Yes. I learned how to write, by teaching writing. There was a teacher I used to study with, Baba Haridas, who said, teach in order to learn. And then I wrote the book as a way to learn how to do it. And really, the book is not about writing. The book is about Zen. I've been a deep Zen practitioner for many years. When I wrote the book, I'd already been practicing with a Japanese Zen master for 12 years. And the book is really about Zen. I took Zen and applied it to writing. I never took a writing class, but I practiced with my teacher, and I called him always the great writing teacher.
So one of the things that the book is sort of well known for is the idea that writing takes practice like any other skill.
Yes, that's where it really broke through, was the idea to make writing my practice, like you do anything else, like you practice the piano or practice tennis. That it's not something that a few are hit by lightning and only that few can do.
Which is how we think of it, right?
We don't anymore, I hope.
Yes.
That it's really available to everybody, and it should be. Everybody should be able to write.
How do you practice? I mean, you can write, but how do you practice writing?
Go every day. Go
I see.
10 minutes. Have a topic, I remember, and keep your hand moving. I have it all in Writing Down the Bones. They can read it. I've repeated it many, many times.
All right. So let's turn then to your recent memoir, Let the Whole Thundering World Come Home. And the memoir is centered on your struggle with chronic lymphocytic leukemia. And I'm wondering just from the outset, did you have any reluctance about writing about that, even from your own personal perspective of, reliving it all?
Yeah, it was hard. I don't know anything about cancer till I got it, which was 6 years ago. And at first, I didn't want to tell anybody. And so I didn't. I didn't tell people for a long time. And then I grew more and more comfortable. And then I just accepted it. But it was hard to write the book at first because I didn't, once I was better, I didn't want to enter that territory
exactly.
again. Exactly. But to be a writer, that was the next thing I needed to write. And I knew if I didn't face it, nothing, no other writing would come. It would be like the elephant in the living room.
So it was the next thing to write because it had been so big in your life, you mean?
Yeah, yeah, it was the next thing. You know, you have, that's part of writing. You have to accept what comes through you and not become, as you say, professional and, you know, allow things to unfold.
Did your publisher say, hey, Natalie, I'm not sure people are going to want to read this book?
I think some publishers were nervous about it, and a lot of them thought, well, you know, every writer who has cancer has to write about it. Now forget about it and go on to another book. And actually, my agent did tell me that. But then he came back and said, the book is really good. It's what we expect from Natalie Goldberg. Now you have to do the unexpected. And he said, let's think, what's something you could add that's an actual odd turn? And the fact that my partner, a month after I had cancer, got cancer. So he said, can you develop that?
I see.
And I said, oh, yes, I certainly can. So the book is also about two people in a relationship having cancer at the same time. And then also, I often, all my life, have visited the graves of artists and writers that I love to pay homage to them. So at the beginning of each chapter or section, I put a visit, one of my visits.
I see. Yeah, and I've read the book, and I enjoyed that as the beginning part of each chapter.
Yeah, so that I'm showing you now how you build a book.
I see.
First, I wrote out the straight story, but that isn't enough. Our own lives isn't quite always enough. You have to give other angles to it. And so the two angles were visiting the graves and my partner.
One of the things I really appreciated was, you know, like with any major illness or injury, you're thrown into this completely different world. And you write very extensively about this sort of crazy world of medicalization, institutionalization, all these drugs that you've never heard of that are somehow going to be injected into you. And it's just a completely different environment than is normal for anyone.
Yes, and I wanted to describe that because before I had cancer, I had no idea what a person goes through. I just had no idea. And once I was thrown into it, it was shocking. So I wanted to kind of set off the alarms for everybody and tell the truth of that journey so we can have more compassion for the people who go through it. And the people who know nothing about it and then have to go through it, they don't have to feel so crazy that, yeah, this is what happens.
And one of the first things, and I know this because I had cancer and my father died of chronic lymphocytic leukemia, the thing that you struggled with. As soon as someone mentions cancer, you think of, hey, I could die.
Yeah, that absolutely. Absolutely. As a matter of fact, now I'm going to ask you, if your father had CLL, how old was he when he died?
He died, he was 63 years old. This was in the 70s, Natalie, and there was literally nothing they could do.
He had what I had?
Well, you know, at the time, they didn't even know about different strains of it. They just called it chronic lymphocytic leukemia. But there was no drug whatsoever.
Oh my God!
That could help him. Yeah. So you know, so that shows you something about how far medical science has progressed.
Very, very thankful. Let me tell you.
So we're going to take a quick break now, and we'll be back in 30 seconds.
Every day, all around the world, this centuries-old art form is thriving. Classical music is made new with fresh interpretations of the great works and with groundbreaking premieres. There's a literal world of creativity to be discovered and shared. I'm Fred Child. Join me for the best from concert halls around the globe on APM's Performance Today.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
We are back on New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. My name is Stephen Spitz, and I'm very pleased to be joined on the phone from Santa Fe by a very well-known New Mexico author, Natalie Goldberg. Natalie also is a writing teacher and has written books about writing that we talked about in the first segment. And you mentioned early on that you are a Zen practitioner, and I'm wondering if Zen teachings helped you deal with your own mortality when you finally realized that, hey, this could be it for me.
Well, you know, Zen, right from the beginning, from my 20s, always reminded us that we were going to die and that we were mortal and that life was impermanent. But you don't really get it. I didn't really get it. I kind of thought it was aesthetic till I was actually faced with the cancer. And now I really get it. But Zen, you know, when you're first confronted, nothing helps. But yes, you know, I live my life with, I paint, I write, and I practice Zen. So I'm sure that stuff kicked in, and that's what I write about in the book. But there were times when nothing kicked in. It was too frightening, and I was just frozen and scared.
So, you know, I think that's a good introduction to a reading that I'd like to ask you to do. Would you mind reading us an excerpt from your book?
No, I'd love to. I'm thinking about one in particular. I live on Cerro Gordo, and Upaya Zen Center is down the road. So that kind of sets it. And it was at a point where I'd been doing all this a certain treatment and for 3 months, and it turned out it didn't work, which was really terrible. So here I am right after I found out none of it is working and the cancer is growing in me. I woke at 6:30 a.m. with a need to get out of the house. I put on clothes and walked out the door. I had no energy. I walked the pace of a snail, the sun still behind a mountain, the light bleak, 1 foot after the other, down the Cerro Gordo dirt road. After 20 minutes, I passed Upaya Zen Center, normally less than a five-minute walk away. I heard the wooden han calling students for Zazen. I went a little farther, a little bit more, and then I couldn't go farther. I stopped, sat down right there on the side of the dirt road. A white car slowed. "Hey, Natalie, I saw you earlier. Always practicing. Doing slow walking, huh?" He was so cheerful. I looked up, could barely raise the corners of my lips. "Yeah." The white car rolled away and accelerated. Dust rose from its wheels. Zen practice is for people with energy, not for the soon-to-be corpses, I thought. I glanced at the road. Was I seeing right? A bull snake, 6 feet long, fat in the middle, pale yellow with large spots, was making its way across. I knew these snakes. Once, when I lived up on the mesa in Taos, I found one curled on my zafu in mid-afternoon when I opened the Zendo door adjacent to my studio. In a panic, I called my friend Sean, who drove his rickety van over the potholed road to my place. He carried it out into the sage. From Sean, I learned that bull snakes were big but harmless. Cerro Gordo was not a busy road, and at that hour, few cars passed. But it would take only one to bounce over that snake to kill it. I was too tired to get up. I crawled into the road and lay parallel to the snake, 6 inches away. They'd have to kill me first. up close, I could see the snake had whiskers on either side of its nose. "Come on, baby," I whispered into the desolate air, the desolate day, this desolate life. "Move, keep going." Its face crawled past me into the dried, prickly ragweed at the edge of the road. Its long, gracious body followed. I wound my way up to standing and walked home.
Well, thank you for that reading, Natalie.
Sure.
You know, you leave the reader with a lot of interpretation. Like, for me, I was wondering if you're thinking, hey, this a car could come hurtling down the road and kill the snake just like cancer could come hurtling down my life.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm doing. I'm talking, with talking about the snake, I'm talking about me. And when I encouraged it to keep going, I was also saying that to myself.
Exactly.
Not consciously, but that's how writing, when writing is good, it's like that. You're not just talking direct. You're talking through something and giving someone a visual idea of it.
So the other thing that comes through in that writing is the idea of, you know, I don't know a lot about Zen, but there is this appreciation of all things animate and inanimate, and you also put that forward in that writing.
Yes, exactly. I mean, I've been trained that way. The snake is no less important than me.
So I have a perhaps unfair question, which is...
Go for it.
You know, in the news just this week has been all this stuff about Myanmar and the horrific slaughter and rapes and murders by neighbor against neighbor, and the people doing the murdering are Buddhists.
I know, it's heartbreaking.
And Americans tend to think that Buddhists don't do these kinds of things, so I'm sort of interested in your take on this.
Well, like you and like Americans, I thought that Buddhists don't do those things either. But evidently, it's human nature. And not to kill people and stuff, but people aren't perfect. And I'm afraid, I mean, it's horrific for me. And I'm afraid that people can use any religion as the reason to do things. And right now, we're witnessing the Buddhist religion being used. They're not Buddhists. I don't consider them Buddhists. Even though they say they are not living a Buddhist life.
So, all right. So let me move back to your book then. Because
answer that for you?
You did. And, I guess my take would be, you know, Buddhists, people who profess to be Buddhists are people who profess to be anything. And we, you know, that we're not all that different when it comes down to it.
I'm afraid not. It's very disappointing. We want to hope that, I found the one thing that hasn't been tainted. But look at human nature. It's very upsetting. Very, very upsetting.
So if you've just tuned in, this is New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. My name is Stephen Spitz, and I'm very pleased to have on the phone from Santa Fe, where she lives, Natalie Goldberg. Natalie is a well-known author on memoirs and on how to write, including Writing Down the Bones. And just to get back to Let the Whole Thundering World Come Home, one of the things that I appreciated in your book, in your memoir, was it's sort of warts and all. It's not like you tell terrible things about yourself, but you're pretty candid about some things that maybe aren't the best in you.
Yes, I wanted to show, you know, I wanted to really show myself. And not just myself, all of us aren't that wonderful. And I wasn't so wonderful to my partner at times when we both had cancer. And I was aware of that, but I didn't want to come out like a Pollyanna. I wanted to give the reader something real, so that it'll ultimately help them.
Yeah, and one of the examples is when your partner gives you some, I think you say they're beautiful turquoise earrings, and you sort of coldly reject them. And then
I throw a temper tantrum.
Yeah.
And I say, you know, I've lived in New Mexico for 50 years. I have a lot of turquoise. I don't want them. And, you know, we struggled, and I showed the struggle. You know, nobody's magic. It's very difficult to go through cancer together. And, you know, by the end, we were alienated, and we had to figure out how to reconnect.
Yes, I think one of the things with cancer or any major injury or illness is one becomes completely self-absorbed, because that's what you're asked to think about. You're asked to think about how this is affecting you, how are the drugs affecting you. That's what everybody asks you about.
I mean, you're fighting for your life.
You're fighting for your life, yeah. But in your situation, you were both fighting for your lives.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I think, you know, ultimately, I think we did pretty well. But, you know, it wasn't all, you know, pleasant.
So in that vein, you even reach a point, and I get this impression from reading your book, just in terms of all the things you had planned, all the things you do, a very energetic person, but you reached a low point where you actually wondered whether you wanted to go on.
Yeah. I mean, when your body, you know, we don't realize all this energy comes from our body. And when the body stops, you can't do things. And I was very angry and rageful. I didn't want to have cancer. I had things I had to do. And finally, I surrendered. And, you know, I was facing that I might go out. And so actually, I wrote another book called The Great Spring, which came out before this book. I wrote times, in case I did die, things that I wanted remembered. Times when I played with ball with my father in the backyard, or climbed to the stone lions and bandolier. And I wrote a whole bunch of stories and created another book of memories.
So sounds like a great idea to write that book.
Yeah, it was. It was wonderful. It was very wonderful. And so what I realized was that in the middle of cancer, cancer doesn't have to be everything. And so I was writing, and I was glad that I had it. I also painted a lot of self-portraits while I had cancer. When I had no longer any words, I would go and paint.
So you talk in the book a lot about your drive to write, and you have this incredible desire to write. Where do you think that comes from?
I think it comes from my whole childhood. I never said anything because I was afraid I'd be jumped on or criticized. So I think I have a great need to express myself and to be heard. And also probably in the middle of knowing about impermanence, I want certain things to be remembered. And I also want to share and help people.
So I want to come back to something you alluded to earlier, which was, you know, you and your partner, I think you refer to yourselves as the cancer twins, are both going through cancer at the same time. It's difficult for one person to do it when your partner's going through it too. So how do you manage to reconnect and get the relationship back together?
Well, there's no prescription. Every couple is different, but my partner is Chinese, and a lot of things we didn't talk about. Our relationship isn't a lot about discussing everything. I'm certainly love to do that, but I don't do that a lot with her, and we worked it out in other ways. Like what I tell in there was one morning I woke up and just felt very peppy after cancer. And I roasted a chicken and made a meal and called her and said, why don't you just come over for dinner? And so I touched on something other than what we were fighting about or cancer, and we stepped into another place. And through that, it somehow unfolded, remembering our relationship and our connection.
So we can't end this interview, and we're coming close to the end of the show, without asking you how you're doing. And the other thing I wanted to mention is it's not just the cancer, it's the drugs you take with the cancer. And you were taking, I'm not sure how to pronounce it,
Ibrutinib. I'm still taking it. It's 3.5 years after and I'm really, really good. I haven't even had any side effects.
No kidding.
What this ibrutinib does is simply stop the protein that the cancer needs to survive. It's very modern and new, and I feel incredibly thankful to the researchers who've been working on it for many, many years. And my partner is also okay now.
That's wonderful news. So we are nearing the end of the show, so I wanted to ask you about something that normally one asks about in the beginning of a show like this, which is the title.
Let the whole thundering world come home.
And I really thought the title talked to me about exactly what the book was about, but what were you trying to convey in that title?
Okay, that's a great question. Very honestly, my original title was Down to the Marrow, and it was actually my editor at Shambhala, the publisher. She read that line in my book and found it and said, this has to be the title. I wasn't that excited about it, but the group that meets the publishers really pushed for it, and as you say, it really is a good title. So what's nice is sometimes when you get a publisher, you don't do all the work. You have other people looking at it from other angles, because after you've worked on a book for a long time, you can't see it anymore. So yes, it does really capture the book. Okay, bring it all on. I'm going to face it.
Exactly. You're sitting with cancer, but the whole world is still coming at you.
Yes, exactly.
So one final question, which is somewhere in the book you say you were wondering if cancer could make you become a more tender flower. Do you think you did that?
Yeah, I think so. I think, yes. I think I so much more appreciate moment by moment life, and also appreciate the impermanence of life. Like, this is the end of the summer. I don't immediately think, oh, well, next summer I'll do, as though, of course, there will be a next summer. I have no idea.
Well, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there. I would like to thank my guest today, Natalie Goldberg. She's the author of a just-published memoir entitled, as we just said, Let the Whole Thundering World Come Home. I would also like to thank my engineer today, Tanya Cole. The executive producer of this show is Lynn Shebeki. My name is Stephen Spitz, and you've been listening to New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas on KUNM. Podcasts of this show are available wherever you get podcasts. Archives of past shows are at stephenspitz.com. Thanks for listening. See you next time.